Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And your team every day extends this week because I wanted to do an episode talking with Adam Morris of Denver Stiffs about the Warriors-Nuggets game. We were always going to do that, but I didn't know until today that the game was not televised. So I figured it would be a better idea to just put this out there for people who are interested in finding out what happened in the game. So Adam was there because he covers the Denver Nuggets, and so he and I talked about the Patrick McCaw-Jamal Murray showdown that ended the game and McCaw's performance, and then a lot about what led up to that. So there was a lot of small lineup versus big lineup stuff because Denver starts two centers, two traditional centers. And so it's about a 25-minute conversation. I really enjoyed it and wanted to get it out there earlier just in case there are people who were interested in seeing how the game went. So hope you like it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks a lot for having me.
I'm more than a little bit jealous that you got to cover, while it was another thing before this, the Jamal Murray-Patrick McCaw face-off that it turned into.
That is what it turned into, and it was kind of... It's funny, this was a really interesting game on a lot of levels. Obviously, there was the finish with McCaw and Murray trading clutch baskets, but it was interesting from the first three quarters of the game because the Warriors unleashed their new death lineup, and the Nuggets stayed pat with their giant lineup with both Nurkic and Jokic. So there was it was a really cool style fight. This was a very, very fun preseason game.
So let's start with the starters, and if you want to go the death lineup thing, we can, or just kind of the more traditional lineups with Zaza and things like that. But what were your big takeaways from that stretch of the game?
Well, from the Warriors' perspective, they were incredible, I thought, in transition and early offense throughout the game when their starters were in. I think that's the part of the game that really clicks for them. Curry was off. His shot was off. I think he started 0 for 7 from the three-point line before hitting his last two shots. But they were getting great looks in the first 10 seconds of the shot clock. When the game slowed down and became a half-court game, and this is my first game this year watching the Warriors, so this is kind of my first peek at this new look. But it just looked like when things slowed down, they got a little bit more clunky, and guys are still filling each other out. They didn't create very good looks in the half-court set with their guys. But I'm guessing that's probably just a little bit of unfamiliarity and things like that. But when they did get out and run, they were just incredible, getting dunks and threes and wide-open shots every time.
And also, the game kind of facilitated some of that because it appeared, because I was mostly listening to the radio feed, that it was really fast-paced, especially when the starters were in.
Yeah, it was. And the Nuggets have been playing at a really fast pace this whole preseason. So I think that might be a sign of things to come, at least from the Nuggets' perspective or on the Nuggets' side of things. But, yeah, it was a really fast game. It was just an entertaining game. Like I said, there was one point in the game Nikola Jokic was guarding Kevin Durant, and that was for like a 5-minute stretch. And you think, I mean, obviously Kevin Durant's such a fun player to watch, but Jokic is just, he's a center. He's a complete opposite. And that wasn't a cross match. That was the actual matchup. So there was a lot of interesting things here, and it did make for a lot of early offense opportunities both ways that I thought both teams did a pretty good job of exploiting.
Yeah, and it's admirable in a way that Denver could do what they decided to and have a reasonable level of success. And that a lot of that is it speaks to the talent that they have in size. And there is this myth to a point where it's like, oh, well, size doesn't really exist in the NBA. It's like, no, limited size doesn't exist. But if a guy is skilled like Jokic is, they're going to have a place in the league.
And Jokic is also skilled at exploiting, at scoring against smaller guys. Seth Partnow, our mutual friend, had a really interesting article, I think 2 years ago, about how some post players are better against taller guys and some guys are better against smaller guys. And really the point was that some guys are actually not that great at exploiting, like a size difference. If they got a mouse in the house, so to speak, they're not that good at scoring on it. Jokic is a guy that is. So Draymond Green, Kevin Durant trying to guard him, he's just a patient post player and was able to get deep post position. The other thing that the Nuggets did, I thought, that Warriors fans will find interesting is the Nuggets, when they had their two big lineups, owned the glass. And not just with Nurkic and Jokic, but Danilo Gallinari, who's 6'10", playing small forward. He ate up some of the offensive glass, and they were able to exploit the Warriors that way. And I'm sure for Warriors fans, that's going to be a something to keep their eye on, because that was an issue, obviously, in the finals and even in the conference finals, teams being able to kind of bully them down low. And that's what Denver did tonight.
Yeah, I mean, the top, if you want to call it the traditional top seven of the Warriors, you know, group, so the starting five, and then Iguodala and Livingston combined for three offensive rebounds. And David West had a one. So, you know, you have all that. Looney had a lot, but that was in a different point in the game. And so you have to kind of consider that a problem. And the concept, theoretically, with, you know, going small against that is that the other team won't be able to cover you. And by and large, that's correct. But there will
you're right. And there will be times when they're just off. And honestly, during that stretch, there was about a four-minute stretch in the second quarter. And during that stretch, the Warriors, they missed a couple of really good looks. So it's very easily they could have gone the other way. I think in that four-minute stretch, the Nuggets, just by my account, so this is unofficial, I think the Nuggets outscored the Warriors by four. So that giant ball versus small ball lineup, the Nuggets actually got the upper hand on it. But that's one or two three-pointers that were in or out that, you know, could have swung it the other way. So it was definitely an interesting style fight, and I think it's more notable that the Nuggets were just able to keep it that close. Not necessarily that they outscored them, but just the fact that the Warriors weren't able to blow them away. You know, Nikola Jokic trying to guard Kevin Durant at the three-point line should be an extreme mismatch, but the Nuggets did a good job of playing team defense and containing it, and then on the other side of the court, they just really pounded them on the glass.
Yeah, and oftentimes getting a team offensive rebounds leads to really good buckets. It doesn't always. Like, you get these weird circumstances where guys either aren't good at putbacks or they just struggle with it, but usually you can generate some quality looks off it. Something I wanted to ask you about, just because it's more of a box score versus live interpretation, is Steph Curry took 7 free throws in this game. Did he look more aggressive in that, or was it more circumstance?
I didn't know that till you said it, so I'm guessing it was probably a little bit more circumstance. I'd have to go back and look at the exact plays where he was getting to the line, but I thought, you know, he was aggressive, I thought, with his shot. I mean, he was 0-for-7, but he took a lot of those Steph shots from last year that he just didn't miss on. He put people on skates, he would get ISOs and kind of attack and get open looks, get really, really open, whether it was a crossover or step back or some combination. So I thought he looked really good tonight, other than the fact that he had a bunch of shots kind of go in and out. I don't know that I would say he was more or less aggressive. I'd say he looked exactly like he looked last year, where he was scorching the league.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. And as you know, free throws can come by so many other factors, especially somebody like him. If he gets fouled shooting a three once or something like that, that can push up the numbers. But
the Nuggets, and I'll say this, the Nuggets have had foul troubles this preseason. And part of that is because Nurkic, you know, fouls a lot. And then Jokic, I think, playing power forward, fouls a lot. So the Warriors were in the bonus. Now that I actually think back, I think 4 of Steph's 7 free throws for sure were fouls that happened 80 feet from the basket, and the Nuggets were just in the bonus. So I can't say for certain, but I would guess that was probably more circumstantial.
And another thing that's hard to glean from the box score, but is a lot easier in person, is that there's been a lot of consternation in Golden State fan circles about the guys who will traditionally play center, so not in the death lineup, so Pachulia and David West. How did you think they looked tonight?
I thought they did okay. It was the Nuggets hung with them, but you know, Jusuf Nurkić is a big body. He's a really, really strong guy. So as much as he's a young guy and maybe not as known around the league, he's a lot stronger than Zaza Pachulia, and he kind of bullied him around a little bit today. One thing, I'll kind of turn the subject here a little bit, because one of the things I found really interesting in this game was the Nuggets have been playing a real deep drop pick and roll coverage. D'Angelo Russell went off for, I think, 53 points in 2 games against the Nuggets, really in 6 quarters against the Nuggets. And it was a lot of high pick and roll into mid-range jump shots, which I talked to Malone at practice the other day, and he mentioned that that was kind of the game plan without kind of going into too much detail. He said that they've changed their pick and roll coverage this year to sort of concede the mid-range pull-up. and they take away – they really run people off the three-point line, and they really protect the rim. Well, today I thought the Warriors really did a good – really had a lot of opportunities to take that mid-range, and they passed it up. And they passed it up over and over and over again to try to kick out for threes. And I think if they would have just used – especially Kevin Durant coming off of a high screen just to the free throw line, and he knocks down two, three, four of those in a row – I think it would have made the Nuggets change their plan, but they seem so focused on getting the type of shots that they wanted that they might have kind of missed the forest for the trees.
That's interesting, and also can tie in with sometimes at an early stage in the season, teams want to focus on their identity and things like that, and then maybe they get more pragmatic when we get into the year. But the Warriors, while we think of it as a three-point shooting team, they do have some capable mid-range shooters. So depending on who gets those looks, especially if it's KD, they can make them for sure.
Kevin Durant could have had 50 points tonight from the free throw line. Because, I mean, just the way that the Nuggets guard the pick and roll, he was open from there. Plus, they don't have a guy. He's 6'11", 7 foot tall. They don't have a guy that can move and be that tall to contest him. So, but, yeah, it stuck out to me quite a bit how much they were passing up shots from that zone.
Yeah, and it'll be notable to see how teams defend the Warriors throughout the season, and that might be one that gets tried, and we'll see how it works for various moments. And there is a lot of that kind of question with them of it'll depend on the personnel. So the Nuggets went more towards their own strengths and did it that way, which generally speaking is probably the best tack because you need to work within what you have. But over the course of the season, we'll see a lot of different things just because when you're dealing with an anomaly, teams will throw a lot of weird stuff out there.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the stats here. They took 42 threes, and they made 40% of them. So they shot a really good percentage of that. But 42 is I don't know what they averaged last year, but that seems a bit high.
Yeah, it certainly is. I don't know what the exact numbers are with that. So we'll talk a little bit about what happened after the starters went out of the game, because McCaw did play a little bit with the Warriors starters and didn't look that good in that stretch from what I've heard, but then totally came on at the end of regulation and then in overtime.
I think he had 0 points. Malone was saying this in the press conference. He had 0 points with, I think, 6 minutes to go. And then he got his first bucket and the floodgates opened. He's a lot of fun. I think Warriors fans, just of the ones I know, are pretty high on him and his skill set. But the guy just knows how to score. He has a knack for scoring. He hit tough shots, tough jumpers. The game winner, the one that he ended up hitting a shot at the buzzer to win the game, for the people that didn't see, it was kind of an off-balance turnaround, you know, the difficult one. So he was just impressive. 18 points in, like I said, the last 10, 11 minutes of the game. He just caught fire and scored every time.
And he has a really kind of unusual skill set for somebody, not only somebody who went 38 in the draft, but just a normal player, because he has the ability to score a lot. He's not a bad passer. And then defensively, he's great at getting steals, and he's he's a better help defender than you think for his age limit. So it's just like when you think about the way that players can be good or bad and they have strengths and weaknesses, it's just not the kind of collection that you usually see. Like, people have compared him to Corey Brewer, I think, because they're both skinny. But
right.
He's a completely different offensive guy than Corey Brewer.
Yeah, he's more dynamic, I would say. I mean, he has a one-on-one game. So I'm surprised, looking at the stats, I'm surprised he only had one steal, because it felt like he had several more than that. Maybe he just had his hand in the passing lane and deflected some things, but he really was impressive, at least as denying the ball and kind of playing the passing lanes today. But yeah, just a dynamic scorer. The shot he hit to tie the game was probably a 29-footer. I mean, he was a couple steps behind the three-point line, right at the, you know, straight on in the center court. So he's got a lot of weapons in his arsenal. And I think, to your point about him being skinny, the league, I think we all kind of look at skinny guys and just automatically write that off as a weakness. But sometimes that's a skill. It plays into – Will Barton has a little bit of this. It plays into the motor, and it plays into the ability to kind of navigate really, really tight spaces. And Patrick McCaw did that a lot today, where it looked like he was double teamed. He kind of splits a double team at you know, on the block, and is able to get a shot off just because he's so sleek and so crafty.
It's also a lot harder to do the kind of bumping that used to be a big knock on skinny guys without getting called for fouls now.
Like, that's true.
It's just a different way that the game works, and so that's probably helped Steph Curry a lot too, you know, that he's a smaller guy, he's gotten, you know, he's added weight to his frame, but it's easier to be that than it was in the Bad Boy Pistons era where, you know, if you ran into the lane, you're just going to get murdered by Laimbeer and Mahorn. Like, it's just a different world now, and those players can benefit from it a little bit more than other guys.
This is my J.J. Barea, LeBron James rule, because back in that 2011 finals, as much as LeBron's post game was not very polished at the time, J.J. Barea was able to guard him just because he's so light and every bump was an offensive foul on LeBron. So you're absolutely right. So I always say this. Sometimes being small and skinny is actually an advantage to players that know how to use it correctly and know how to draw fouls from it.
You're going to love this, but this will be, depending on when everything gets released, this will be the second time Barea defending LeBron came up in 2 days on my podcast. Because it's just one of those galvanizing things for people, because it was so surreal to see,
right.
To see it actually kind of work. I'm using air quotes for work, but it did work. You know,
no,
it yielded
worked.
Those results. But so I wanted to ask you, this was your first game, as you said, watching the Warriors. One of the larger questions for fans, the coaching staff, and everything is there's a potential position battle or rotation spot for sure battle between McCaw and Ian Clark. Obviously it's a small sample size. It's one game, and McCaw looked a lot better in the last 10 minutes than his first 15. But where would you kind of lean on that from today's game?
Well, I know Ian Clark a little bit better just from his affiliation with the Nuggets. He played with them on the summer league team two years ago. I lean towards McCaw. I just think he's more dynamic. Ian Clark has a great shot. He can get hot. But Patrick McCaw does the exact same thing. But I think he just has more versatility in the way that he scores. Ian Clark, I think of as much more of a catch-and-shoot shooter, whereas McCaw really had a lot of weapons in his arsenal and can create offense. Obviously, it was against Denver's third unit because there's a lot of the rookies and some of the guys fighting for that 15th slot. But he looked like the best player on the court and the guy that was pushing that was forcing the defense's hand on every play of overtime.
One of the most fascinating lineup constructions, I haven't written about this yet, but will in the near future with this team, and it aligns with that, is that if they're going to do the stagger with Durant and have him play with second units, is playing Durant, McCaw, and Clark together. Because if one of them can defend point guards, if one of McCaw and Clark can do it, you don't really need Sean Livingston in that, because Durant's probably going to have the ball in his hands a lot. And so going that direction could work.
That's really, really interesting. I haven't thought about this, so I'm kind of on the spot here. I would probably not. I like Livingston a lot. I'd probably want to play him over Ian Clark. But I do like Patrick McCaw as sort of a second weapon alongside Durant in those second units. But it does bring me to a point, one of my major points that I thought today, and Livingston didn't play. Who else was out? Was anybody else missing today? Varejao. So I don't know if Varejao is really going to be in the rotation or not. But
none of us do.
Yeah, one of the things I thought was that the bench really seemed a lot thinner. I mean, obviously it's more thin than it was last year, but it kind of stuck out. Now, Denver has a very deep bench. Their second unit, you know, they've got 10 guys that are all kind of even, you know, relatively even. But the Warriors bench, I thought, really was thin when that second unit came in, because there just wasn't a lot of guys that could push the action.
Yeah, that makes sense, considering it's an unusual strength for Denver that they're, you know, a team that's probably, I mean, the expectation is probably that they're going to be outside of the playoffs, though we don't know that for sure. But to
right.
be as deep as they are, considering how young they are, is notable. But it is a concern for the Warriors, at least for the regular season, because you're going to have nights where you need those guys to really step up, even if you run a stagger.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm thinking, more of a regular season thing, because if this team's healthy, the seven or eight guys, that's what matters, is your best eight guys. But throughout the regular season, resting guys, injuries here and there, minor injuries that keep a guy out a week, obviously they still have an incredible starting lineup almost no matter what happens, but the guys that come in behind them definitely are a lot more raw and a lot more up and down. So, that is a strength of Denver, so it was a little bit more pronounced today maybe than it will be against all teams, but it definitely stood out in this game.
I don't want to take too much more of your time, so I'll open it up to you just because, you know, this is a shorter conversation, of any other takeaways and, like, basically questions I missed asking you that you think are worth sharing.
Not really. I think we covered a lot of it. The Warriors to me look like a team that, I mean, obviously it's preseason. Even the regular season I don't think is important to them, and they kind of look like a team that was out there experimenting with themselves. They're still trying to get the flow of their offense and figure things out. I thought Klay really stood out to me as a guy that was going to shoot it every time he touched it, which I thought was a little bit odd. I don't know that I would say he forced too many bad shots, but it definitely, every time he touched it, I felt like it was going up. So I'm guessing you guys have probably talked about that. You know, Warriors fans and reporters and stuff have been talking just a little bit about where the shots, how they get distributed. But I thought when Klay was in the game, he was not a focal point, but the ball was finding him for shots more often than anyone else.
Yeah, I actually talked about that yesterday with a guest about the idea, because Klay is the worst passer of a lot of their best units. And what that means is, and he has so much confidence in his shot, that more often the ball is just going to stop with him. And that's not the worst thing in the world. You know, he's an amazing shooter and he can do all that. But he, while his game has improved a lot, he's still not that couple dribbles and pass guy. And then he's also the weakest passer in transition. He's not terrible, but there's a running joke in the press corps for the Warriors and among fans that he never finds Curry in transition, ever. And he's a great, talented player, perfect fit in many ways for this team, but his flaws are somewhat more pronounced now, whereas when it was him and Harrison Barnes, like, Barnes was more limited in the same ways. So it wasn't as noticeable. But now when you have Durant, who's maybe the most versatile scorer in the league and an underrated passer, the juxtaposition is very different than it was.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing, Kevin Durant's such a great post player. He's one of my favorite post players in all the NBA, just his touch, you know, on turnaround jumpers from 10 feet. I don't know if he had a single post up today, which Denver had to, you know, again, they had a unique setup. Jokic was guarding him for parts. They had two big guys on the court a lot, but he just didn't get the ball in the post a lot. And I think that, I don't know if the Warriors are working that in. Is that something that they've been going to a lot in the preseason, or is that something they haven't really worked into the offense yet?
They haven't worked it in much. My guess is that it's going to be something where when they force a switch and then attack a switch, you know, more in the way, to make a weird analogy, to how Philly might end up using Ben Simmons' ability to post up, which is that you don't do it in the straight man-to-man. And Durant is such a good ISO player as well, that maybe in those circumstances where it's a guy who's a little bit bigger, you want him to take him off the dribble or come off a screen or something like that. But he is so good at that they should incorporate ways to do that. And the Warriors have, over the years, figured out ways to draw the matchup they want and then build a play off that by, you know, Steph and Klay setting screens for each other and various other things. And Durant's in some ways an even more obvious guy to do that because he has a greater size disparity.
Absolutely. I think Durant really, I think, should have been the focal point today. And I know it's preseason and it's early. I think the Warriors are just trying to develop their identity, as you mentioned earlier. But if this were a regular season game, I'm looking at Kevin Durant, 6-for-11, 4-for-4 from the free throw line. He was the only positive out of the starting lineup. He was a +2, 19 points. I think he could have probably – this was a weird game where I think the Warriors could have just said, you know, Durant, go right at whoever's guarding you, whether it's Gallo, whether it's Jokic, whether it's Kenneth Faried, whoever. Just attack him every time in isolation. I know that's not Warriors basketball, but at least on nights like tonight and maybe against matchups like the Nuggets – he probably would have scored 50 points and led them to a blowout win just because there weren't any answers on the court for him.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting insight. And because even though this is Locked On Warriors, I don't care. There are two questions I feel like I need to ask. And one is, how did Moutier look, and specifically defensively, but both ways, really, how was he?
I thought he was all right. He struggled to shoot from he was 3-for-9 from the field, but he was aggressive. He took the ball. He was confident. He was strong. He took the ball hard to the hole. I think with Moutier, here's one thing that I think about him, because his finishing numbers in the paint were really, really bad last year, and they've been really, really bad this year. I think the difference so far the preseason is that it's not costing the Nuggets very much. He kind of has that Reggie Jackson thing going, where a lot of his shots at the rim just turn into offensive rebounds because he's a guy that forces the defense to rotate. He's just so strong and so good at getting into the paint that the defense has to step up. So even though he went 3-for-9, I would guess several of those shots turned into offensive rebounds and scores.
That makes sense. And then last question on that is, how did the rest of the pups look? I mean, you can name whoever you want, but Denver has so many fun young guys that it's going to be a blast to watch them this year.
Nurkic continues to look like he's going to have his best year yet, which I think is the most important one, at least this season. Jamal Murray had a nice game. He was going – we would be talking about him instead of Patrick McCaw had the Nuggets pulled this one out, because both guys were kind of going at each other down the stretch and hitting clutch shots and tough shots off balance. And then the other guy I'll throw out for you is Juancho Hernan Gomez, who's just been so much fun to watch, both in summer league and in this preseason. The Nuggets did a fun thing today. They played the two center lineup for large stretches, and then when those guys came out, they would play Kenneth Faried at center and Juancho Hernan Gomez at power forward. And Juancho's like 225 pounds. He is a really light power forward, and Kenneth Faried obviously is not a center, but those guys had a really fun chemistry going, and just that they made every hustle play. They were so fast, and Juancho Hernan Gomez is kind of like a mini Faried in that his motor is always going, and he just kind of makes plays that he had no business making. So watching those two guys on the court today, going up against guys like David West and McAdoo, they kind of took it to him just because they were out hustling him and beating him to the ball, just out quicking him and stuff. So Juancho would be a guy that I think stood out today.
Those kind of lineups can really work on second units, and the Nuggets might be a great test case of it, because we focus on a lot of other things, but when you can play with effort and Free can get on the offensive glass, the other stuff doesn't matter as much, because rim protection is wonderful. I'm a fan of it all the time. But right. It's a little bit less important when you, generally speaking, backup teams don't have great penetrators. So, you know, it's a very different part of your defense.
And they're playing in Denver at Mile High. I think being here at altitude and having a lineup of Wilson Chandler, Juancho Hernan Gomez, Kenneth Faried, Will Barton, those are guys that are going to wear the other team out almost every single night. There are the teams that have really good scoring backup bigs. You know, your Zach Randolphs, your Enes Kanters. Those guys, I think, are going to make that lineup are much less effective. But for most teams, like you said, they don't have scoring centers on their bench. And I think when teams come to Denver and that second wave is those guys who just never stop running and hustling, I think it can be a really good boost for the Nuggets.
And their opponents will be coming in cold, because they'll have been sitting on the bench for eight or so minutes of running time, not much less how much actual chronological time it is.
Absolutely. So the Nuggets, I think we did a Nuggets rank on DenverStiffs.com where we tried to rank all of the players, and number one was Gallo, number two was Jokic. That was easy. After that, spots 3 through 9 were so hard, because all those guys really are similar, you know, at least coming into the season, are similar impact type players. So that's an advantage to Denver. They really do have 9-10 guys that can all play 20 minutes a night, and that's what happened tonight. It looked like they had a nice rotation going.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time and giving us a first-person account.
Always love talking to you, Danny.
Thanks again to Adam Morris for taking the time to come on, especially after that long overtime game. And you can read him at Denver Stiffs. That is the Denver blog that he writes for. He also contributes to Nylon Calculus, and you can follow him on Twitter at Adam Morris. That's ADAM_MARES. Very talented guy. I think you'd enjoy his work quite a bit. That's the reason that we connected in the first place. And so it was great to get him on. When we planned on it, it was just, hey, it was an interesting game to talk about. And then piecing together that it wasn't going to be on TV and that the timing for him was best to do it right after the game. So wanted to get it out there and not capitalize on the enthusiasm, because we were going to do it either way. But it definitely got a little bit more sizzle because of how the game turned out. So hope you enjoyed that. And the expectation, while nothing is definite yet, is that next week will still be a 5-episode week, because the Warriors play again. So we'll talk about the Lakers game on what will be Monday's podcast and then go into a normal week. So unless something crazy happens, the expectation will be that this will just be a 6-episode week and next week will be a 5. So you can call it a free episode if you want or anything like that. But it's also a thank you. It's been a great run, great first month for Locked On Warriors. It's been an absolute pleasure to do the show. And if you have any feedback, you can reach out at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux. You can also send something to DannyLaRueMBA@gmail.com. You can follow Locked On Warriors, Locked On Dubs on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook, LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com if you want to reach out that way. I read everything, respond to what I can, and we'll probably do, I'm thinking about doing a mailbag next week, and depending on comments, it might be a mix of Reddit, Twitter, and email, because I have some emails that people want me to get to as well, and I'm happy to do that when I have the time. So probably try to do that, and then they play the Lakers. They also play the Blazers next week at a game I will be lucky enough to attend, so that will be fun. and going through other stuff. So your input is always appreciated. And if you want to support the show, you can subscribe, download every episode. Really do appreciate it because it helps with our metrics. Listens and downloads and all that really do matter. You can also leave a rating and a review on whatever your player is. Really do appreciate that. And then word of mouth is absolutely gigantic with this and any other podcast that you listen to, because finding people and reaching out can be a very important part of the process. And I appreciate greatly everybody who has already done that and those of you who will continue to, because word of mouth is extremely important, especially when with the kind of the idea of starting anything new. And so the Locked On Podcast Network in general is pretty new. And then this show is even, I believe it is one of the newest ones in the entire network. So thank you so much to everybody who has helped make this a success so far. And it will only grow from here and ready to go strong for a whole season. And hopefully that runs deep into June and everything that goes with that. So thank you so much for listening. Take care, make it a great day, and have a great weekend.